When word of Magellan's spectacular commission reached Portugal, King Manuel reacted with alarm. The navigator had betrayed them all, and the members of the royal court were at a loss to understand why he had done so. No one in Portugal dared to admit the actual reason for Magellan's behavior, that King Manuel had refused to back the navigator, humiliating him over and over again. King Manuel did what he could to ruin Magellan's name while, at the same time, trying to lure Magellan and Ferrero back to Portugal. He involved the Portuguese ambassador to King Charles's court, Álvaro da Costa, who sought out the exiles, promising that King Manuel would reconsider their request for an expedition. Da Costa was explicit about the dire consequences that would befall the two if they continued with their plan to sail for Spain. Magellan refused to be swayed. He suspected that if he returned to Portugal, he would be thrown into jail, tried for treason, and executed. Magellan replied that he had formally renounced his allegiance to King Manuel and had given his loyalty to King Charles. Álvaro da Costa appealed to King Charles himself. Uncertain about how to handle the matter, King Charles turned to his advisors for guidance, and they reiterated their position that the Spice Islands lay in the Spanish hemisphere, and Magellan's expedition would not violate the Treaty of Tordesillas. Da Costa tried to put the best face on his failed attempt at diplomacy. He wrote to King Manuel that Magellan and Ferrero actually wished to return to Portugal, but King Charles prevented them from doing so. The letter's contents became known, much to the outrage of King Charles. Ultimately, da Costa's false claims hurt Portugal's cause and hardened King Charles's determination to stand by his two embattled explorers. Despite all the tension between them, King Manuel proceeded with his plans to marry Charles I's sister, Leonor, according to a contract dated July 16, 1518. 4 days after King Manuel completed his nuptial arrangements, the Spanish monarch instructed the Casa de Contratación to proceed with Magellan's expedition to the Spice Islands without delay. Magellan and Ferrero were to receive money to begin their preparations, and they were ordered to Seville to outfit their ships. "Something has come up," Magellan wrote to King Charles on Saturday, October 23, 1518, in the midst of outfitting the fleet for the voyage. It's possible that Magellan's problems stemmed at least in part from his inadequate Spanish. Time and again he had to rely on translators, and his inability to communicate underscored his outsider status. Even now, writing to King Charles, he had to rely on a scribe. He proceeded to explain the matter. "I had to haul one of the ships to shore because there was an ebb tide. When it was time to work, I ordered the men to put up four flags with my coat of arms on the mast, where those of the captain are customarily placed, while those of Your Majesty were to be placed on top of Trinidad, which is the name of the ship." The unusual juxtaposition of signs, emphasizing that a Portuguese captain was sailing for Spain, attracted a large gossipy crowd of onlookers. The crowd thought that the four flags containing Magellan's coat of arms signified those of the King of Portugal. Resentment boiled along until a functionary ordered Magellan to remove the offending flags. He refused. Another Spanish official approached Magellan with the same demand. "No," Magellan explained, "he would not take down the flags." As Magellan was explaining all this to the official, the man who had first approached him came up the steps calling the people to seize the Portuguese captain who had put up the flags of the King of Portugal. At that moment, chaos erupted. The insolent functionary called military officers to seize Magellan. The two officials who had challenged Magellan got into a fight with each other over how to treat him. The workmen outfitting Trinidad quickly fled, as did a number of the sailors, further exasperating Magellan, who stood by helplessly as he watched the local officials disarm the sailors and even arrest several of them. In the struggle, one of Magellan's pilots was stabbed as he was going about his work. Although Magellan escaped harm, his dignity and authority had suffered a blow. Magellan's fury at the incident was understandable. In exile, he enjoyed the protection of King Charles. If he could not maintain order here, on the quay at Seville, how would he lead men on the perilous journey across an uncharted ocean to the Spice Islands? Within days of receiving Magellan's letter, King Charles demonstrated his loyalty and punished the offenders. Preparations for the voyage continued, but the flag incident served as a warning to Magellan that his men, especially the Spaniards, posed a danger as great as the sea itself. On April 6, 1519, the king sent orders to another officer, Juan de Cartagena, to serve as the inspector general of the fleet under the command of the two Portuguese commanders. Yet his salary was considerably more than Magellan's, the highest of any in the fleet, 110,000 maravedis. Essentially, Cartagena was to have final say over all commercial aspects of the expedition. He was the chief accountant and representative of the king's treasury. That was not all. According to the orders, it would be Cartagena's job to see to it carefully that the bartering and trading of said fleet is done to the greatest possible advantage to our estates. This provision enabled Cartagena to step in at any moment and prevent Magellan from enriching himself, even if he believed he was entitled to do so under his own contract with King Charles. Implicitly, these new instructions to Cartagena took precedence over the prior arrangement. There was more. Cartagena was to function as the eyes and ears of the king throughout the voyage. If the co-commanders were negligent in any way, Cartagena was to report their behavior to the Casa de Contratación in writing. These instructions were so thorough that a Spaniard predisposed to mistrust Magellan and Ferrero could conclude that he, and not they, had the final say on the conduct of the entire voyage. And that was exactly the conclusion to which Cartagena came. King Manuel made one more attempt to subvert the Armada de Malacca. He sent his agent, Sebastián Álvarez, to Seville with orders to undo Magellan's resolve. On July 18, 1519, Álvarez secretly reported his efforts to persuade Magellan to call off the expedition. Álvarez began a carefully rehearsed argument to persuade Magellan to abandon his nefarious scheme. "I said to him that to acquire honor unduly, and when acquired by such infamy, was neither wisdom nor honor, for he might be certain that the chief Castilians of this city, when speaking of him, held him to be a vile man, of low blood, since to the disservice of his true king and lord he had accepted such an enterprise." Furthermore, Álvarez wrote, "He might be sure that he was held to be a traitor in going against the state of your highness." Every term of opprobrium that Álvarez hurled at Magellan strengthened the mariner's resolve to carry out his mission. Even Álvarez was impressed by Magellan's conviction. "It seemed to me that his heart was true as to what befitted his honor and conscience." Despite his resolve, Magellan suffered pangs of conscience over his decision to abandon his homeland. "He made a great lamentation," Álvarez observed, "but that he did not know of anything by means of which he could reasonably leave a king who had shown him so much favor. I told him that he should weigh his coming to Portugal." Leaving Magellan to his torment, Álvarez tried to persuade himself and King Manuel that the expedition would never come to pass. He counted on the once brilliant Ferrero's deteriorating mental state to aid the Portuguese skullduggery. "I spoke to Ruy Ferrero on two occasions," Álvarez reported to his sovereign. "It seems to me that he is like a man deranged in his senses." Since leaving Portugal, and even perhaps before, the brilliant cosmographer had exhibited signs of instability. One acquaintance said that Ferrero sleeps very little and wanders around almost out of his mind. Others remarked on his irritability or simply stated that he had lost his mind. Even King Charles took note of Ferrero's condition, and on July 26, 1519, issued a royal certificate declaring that Ferrero would not sail with Magellan. Instead, the cosmographer would remain in Seville to prepare for another expedition that would follow in Magellan's wake. This violation of the 10-year exclusive King Charles had granted Magellan was more likely a face-saving gesture designed to preserve what little dignity Ferrero had left, for he never went to sea. Magellan seemed relieved to rid himself of the unstable Ferrero. He agreed to the removal as long as the fleet could keep the cosmographer's precious, state-of-the-art navigational instruments. Ferrero's trove consisted of compasses, astrolabes, quadrants, and hourglasses. Then there were the charts, 24 in all, most of them top secret, all of them extremely valuable. All of these precious items remained with the Armada at Magellan's disposal. So the team of Magellan and Ferrero, the driving force behind the expedition since their days in Lisbon, was sundered. As head of the Casa de Contratación, Fonseca replaced the would-be explorer with Andrés de San Martín, a well-connected Spanish cosmographer and astrologer who had long sought the lofty role for himself in the Casa's affair. San Martín occupied a prestigious position in the roster and commanded a generous salary, an advance of 30,000 maravedis, plus an additional 7,500 to cover expenses, but he did not hold Ferrero's exalted rank. The removal of Ferrero opened the way for Inspector General Cartagena, the obvious candidate, to take his place. Archbishop Fonseca appointed Cartagena as Ferrero's replacement, specifying that he was persona conjunta. The exact meaning of this title was subject to varying interpretations, but at a minimum, it meant that Magellan was supposed to consult with Cartagena in all matters. At the maximum, it meant that the two were co-commanders, with Cartagena as Magellan's official supervisor. Although he had no experience at sea, Juan de Cartagena found himself leading one of the largest maritime expeditions mounted by Spain. This bizarre situation had much to do with his relationship with the man who had appointed him, Archbishop Fonseca. Cartagena was considered Fonseca's nephew, but as everyone realized, Cartagena was Fonseca's illegitimate son. Nor was he the only example of this peculiar brand of nepotism. The fleet's accountant, Antonio de Coca, was the nephew of Fonseca's brother. Not only that, but Fonseca appointed two close friends and servants of his as captains of two of the ships. These were Luis de Mendoza, who assumed command of Victoria, and Gaspar de Quesada of Concepcion. Not surprisingly, all three captains appointed by Fonseca, Cartagena, Quesada, and Mendoza, despised and looked down on Magellan from the moment they came on board.